Liv, thank you so much for being a guest on Podcast of the Day. It's epic to have you on, especially with everything that's gone on in the last couple of months for you. I can't believe you've even found time to fit us in.
Of course. No, I'm so excited to be on this podcast. I think when you asked me to be on it, I was like, oh my gosh, it's actually a dream.
That's literally the sweetest thing I think anyone's ever said.
I think I first remember seeing you at WIT. And you were doing something, I think it was with Josh Alchama, and literally I was like, oh my gosh, what is this? And then I saw the podcast, and then I saw you at SID, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is legit. Like, I've made it.
The thing is, it goes both ways, because I'm there seeing you on the front line as a nurse working in the ICU. You're in magazines everywhere I look. So it kind of works both ways. There's girl crushes going everywhere.
I know. I do feel like this couple of months for a lot of people, I feel like the past 5 months have been really strange times, but for me, I really do feel like it's been a bit of a whirlwind. I sort of created the CrossFit nurse as myself in the past 7 months, and then having lockdown happen, I do feel like it's accelerated sort of who I am, and then really made me think about what I want to be doing and how I want to take myself forward. So it's been really great.
Because a CrossFit nurse was born out of a YouTube, right?
Yeah, so I sort of was like, okay, so everyone knows me as Livy Tom.
Yeah.
Livy Tom does a bit, she loves WIT, does CrossFit. But then I was like, well, no one really knows that I have a profession as well. It was sort of a bit strange because I got a lot of people asking me if I was a coach, if I was a PT, and I was like, no, I'm actually a full-time nurse.
I just really like CrossFit.
Yeah, I just really love CrossFit. And then I was like, well, I really do want to progress well in CrossFit. So how do I sort of focus on myself and make myself into someone that I know who I am? Which is really confusing. So I was like, well, I'm going to try and do a YouTube, because then I can talk about myself, talk about my projects, talk about how I want to move myself forward. And then I'll have a clear brand. And that's sort of where the CrossFit nurse was born. I was like, well, I love CrossFit and I'm a nurse. Put it together. No one else has got that name. So it's great. And that's basically how it was born. And I remember doing all of my branding and stuff. And I was just sat at WIT. And I was like, this is great. I just feel like this all fits together. So yeah, that was how it was born, really. So ever since then, it's just been accelerated. And obviously nurses have had so much media, spotlight recently because of COVID, that everyone sort of recognises how much work we do. So even more so now, I feel like people sort of appreciate how hard it is to juggle CrossFit and wanting to compete in the next couple of years and be a nurse at the same time. And a lot of people, well, a few people, especially in the CrossFit world, actually really motivate me to do that. So, yeah.
All right, we'll talk about the competing in a couple of years a little bit later, but let's roll it back.
Roll it back.
How did you find CrossFit? How did this come into your life? Because you're in the spotlight now, but...
Yeah.
It must have started somewhere. You must have been a complete beginner at some point.
Oh my gosh, yes. When Livy Tom was Livy Tom, Livy Tom loved to do boxing. So I was a bit of one of these boxer size freaks. That's what I'm going to call it.
They're not freaks.
Well, no.
People keep them fit. It's all good.
Yeah. So I loved a bit of boxer size. It was co-box.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. And they basically turned me into... a little bit of a boxing machine. Loved a bit of hit workouts, and because I did have a strong-ish presence on the gram, I suppose, sort of doing fitness and more focusing on body confidence and body image and things like that. I suppose Dan from WIT saw what I was doing on my Instagram, and then he just invited me down for a session at WIT. And I never heard of WIT before. And I was like, well, let's just give it a go. Yeah, why
free
not?
Session.
Didn't even know what CrossFit was. Not going to lie. And then I went down. I was so impressed by, number one, the lights. Let's not lie.
it is one of those beautiful gyms, isn't it?
Yeah, it's pretty nice. And I went down for a staff session, one of their Thursday morning sessions. So they sort of eased me in. And I remember just being like, I'm sweating from my elbows and I love it. So, and I turned to Dan after. I was like, thank you so much. I don't think I'm ever going to leave. And then the next day, I literally signed up and it. Yeah.
What workout was it? Can you remember?
Oh my gosh. No, I can't. I cannot remember for the life of me. It wasn't, I think they eased me in with a good workout. I don't think it was anything like snatches. I don't think I would have probably gone back if I had introduced a snatch the first time. Here's a snatch, try it.
Yeah, Olympic lifting, you've never done it before. Yeah. Have fun.
I think it was like a clean, I think it was something to do like clean sprints and like a generic movement, like body weight movement. It was more like the environment that I was working out in that I'd never come across before. It was like everyone was doing the same workout. The hype was real.
Yeah, there the is music, so much hype, isn't there?
Yeah. So much hype. The music was like, what is going on?
I know it sounds ridiculous and everyone goes, oh, CrossFit, the community. Either you love that aspect or you just go, oh, community, are you kidding? Oh, cult, cult, cult. But did you get that sense when you walked in that actually it was kind of like this really communal vibe and everyone was just like loving what they were doing and supporting each other?
Yeah, 100%. It's really difficult to explain, but...
Yeah, how do you sell it to someone?
Yeah, it's like you're all doing the same workout, but the workout's not done until the last person finishes. And for that to be put forward in sort of a way that everyone can understand, it's like the workout is difficult. Everyone's done it, so everyone knows what everyone else is going through. So you're all struggling or... And those that complete it first, obviously, they're amazing, great athletes. But it's the ones that keep going. They are really gritting their teeth. They're finding it really difficult or, you know, it's just not their jam. And it's when the people around you come and support that person. They literally come and cheer you on. Make sure you don't stop because you can't stop because you want
watching.
To do it. Yeah.
yeah.
And you're like, they believe
and
in me.
And you've
got to do it.
It.
Yeah, and I've definitely been that person. Like, I've had what workout was it? I think it was one of the female hero workouts, and it's a run. It's like four rounds of time. It's like a run, kettlebell swings, and pull-ups, and then to finish, the buyout is 100 burpee box jump overs.
Already.
When I was literally when I was like really new to CrossFit, I was like, what? And yeah, it was finishing those burpee box jump overs, which you're like, I'm just stepping over the box because I can't physically jump anymore and I'm so out of breath, I'm so sweaty, but everyone is there like, come on, you've got this, keep going. And that's what the community is like. It doesn't matter if you're PBing 25 kg or 125 kg, whatever it is, if someone knows that you're going up for that lift, people literally stop and be like, let's go, you've got this, and we'll literally power your lift. And that's insane.
Do you find you've built like really solid friendships from it as well? Like, all of my closest friends in the world have come through CrossFit.
Yeah, 100%. Like, my partner who I do partner comps with, Lexi, I met her through CrossFit. We did the last open together. no, the open before that. So the first one of 2019.
Yeah.
So we did that open together and she was new to WIT. She came down to WIT for Friday Night Lights.
Yeah.
Just by chance, we did 20.1 together, which was the Rowan Warbles.
Yeah.
And I remember being like, yeah, it's okay. Like, it's a really good environment. We're going to have a really good time. I'll judge you, blah, blah, blah. And I went first, got a pretty good score. I feel like I got a pretty good score. And then she got on the rower. She got on the wall balls. I kid you not, I was like this.
For those of you who are not watching visually, but like just listening, the jaw was on the floor.
Jaws on the floor. This girl can row and this girl can wall ball like there's no tomorrow. Like, and like, it was unbelievable. Even Dan, the owner of WIT, was like, who is she?
Where did she come from?
Yeah, and that's how me and Lexi met. And ever since, we've been in partner comps together. So she's my partner comp. Yeah. We can see my stuff on my YouTube. We did Battle for Middle Ground pairs together. And a lot more in the future to come. A lot of things have been cancelled. But a lot of things to come. So literally she's one of my best friends, and I met her through CrossFit. And then obviously the community itself, like everyone on a Saturday obviously goes to brunch after training. What else is there to do on a Saturday? Why do you do? And also CrossFit brings partner wads. So even if you're in a gym, even if you know someone or not, you might be partnered with someone that you actually don't know. And then you realise, oh my gosh, we get along really well.
Because we've got this crazy thing in common and we can talk about it. And then we realise we have other things in common.
And everyone knows all CrossFit is like to do is talk about CrossFit. So you have to have CrossFit friends, because else everyone thinks that you're crazy. Like, I've met lots of really great friends through CrossFit. And a lot of people who actually I consider as family, like Gus, head coach at Witt, he literally is like a brother to me, his wife Siddy, and now his little daughter Malu. So we're lots of like really nice stuff that has come from being a part of that community, and it's just amazing.
So one of the things that resonates with me, and I bet you it's similar for you just based on our jobs, is that actually it takes up a lot of time and we don't know when or where we're going to be. We don't have set schedules, and you can't do team sports because you can't commit to every Tuesday, every Thursday training, that kind of thing. And that's where CrossFit is fitting so well into our lifestyles, because you get that team environment, but you can train as and when you know, as and when required, especially if you want to compete.
Yes, I do. I totally agree with that. Like, it's something that's always there. You know that that class is going to be on and running at X time, and that they've got multiple slots during the day, or that you've got open gym at these times and you can go in and hit your workout. And I think that that sort of environment, that you always know that you're not going to be the only person in there, apart from sometimes like me when I'm very lucky because I train at the weirdest times, mostly really late at night. So if I hit like an open gym in the evening, maybe it will be me, but there's always going to be a coach like flying around being like, go on. So yeah, you definitely get that sense of team. And also pre obviously COVID, after each workout, and even in COVID, you either get like a high five or a little arm five, that elbow tap now. And that's just what it's all about. I think that there is a sense of team. And even if you feel like you can't compete in your team sports that you might have done during university, because I did netball.
Volleyball.
So, and you know, you wanted to carry on doing something that involved you in being a team. CrossFit is just one of those things that sort of encompasses it all. And totally, especially if you want to then compete as within your box, you definitely got that opportunity to create good relationships with other people that you think you could probably join a team with for future competitions, which is great.
So COVID, like, I mean, you are on the front line, you're a full-time nurse. How did that completely change your world upside down?
I think I do have to laugh at myself, because looking back at when it all started on the news, and then a lot of the people at Witt who might have been European, especially the like Italian community within our gym at Witt, because it started obviously manifesting in Italy first, they were like, they would come to me and be like, oh, what's going on? And I'd be like, I don't actually really know. Like, I just think it's a bit of a bad virus. Like, I'm not sure at the moment.
No,
I think
everyone was like that. When I remember going to my mum, who was a practicing GP, and I was like, should we actually be worried about this?
Yeah.
And I remember that sense of growing worry that actually to begin with, it was nothing and it was far away. And then it got, oh, it was a bit more real.
Yeah.
Oh, people are talking about it more. Oh, conversations are happening around the water cooler and work. You know, this is getting realer.
Yeah, and it did start to get real. I mean, the more it started to manifest in the media, the more people were a lot more like, oh, I'm not sure what we should be doing anymore. Should we be coming to CrossFit? Should we be coming to the box? Like, I carried on as normal. I carried on work as normal. And then sort of slowly started to realise, okay, things are going a little bit south. Not sure how my advice to people should be then taken, because obviously you tell people not to worry, that things are going to be okay, they just have to abide by what the government's saying and what they're putting out, But then people always ask, but what do you personally think? And it's really difficult because I'm one of these like really optimistic people, like, oh, we'll be okay, we'll be fine, yeah. We'll be fine, and, like, carrying on as normal. But really, in the grand scheme of things, obviously that week leading up to UK going into lockdown, I remember being at WIT and sort of training in open gym, and even Dan came up to me and was like, well, I don't know, what do you think is going to happen now? And I was like, well, I don't really know. Like, I don't know how long it's going to go on for. And obviously then all these small businesses have these problems of how they're going to sustain themselves. CrossFit boxes themselves are renowned for being two guys or two girls, or a guy and a girl, or a couple have set up their own box, which is insane.
Small business.
It's a small business at the end of the day. They need their members. They need the loyalty of their members to stay and support the box, which is heartbreaking because at the best of times, you know, you do have to think about yourself. People are going to be furloughed. How are we going to maintain our memberships? So I just think that no one really saw what was coming as
before.
That,
yeah, absolutely.
As that was gonna happen, and we're gonna be in lockdown for this long amount of time. And then obviously I was like, well, I'm a nurse, like, as well.
This really impacts me.
Apart from the fact that, you know, UK is going into lockdown, they're taking away literally CrossFit from us. So everyone's social
outlet.
Yeah, their social activities, their community, like their community activities, even going for a coffee with your friends, it's not going to happen anymore. So for me, I was literally approaching lockdown like, this is going to be full on. And I didn't actually expect that. Like, in the first month, I didn't anticipate everything that has happened to have happened. And I just think that's just a shock.
I mean, I know there's probably a lot you can't talk about, but how did it manifest through your job?
Yeah.
How did things get worse? And
yeah, so obviously there's a lot of like patient confidentiality, but on my YouTube, I did actually have to talk about, and on my Instagram, I sort of was hinting at the fact that things are definitely changing in the hospital. So at the start, I was a band 6, which is a senior sister on charge nurse on a congenital ward area, and that was my job. And I remember receiving one of the first patients who we suspected might have had COVID, and I remember because he was quite unwell during the night, and I was just like, oh well, just isolate him and do the protocol that we've been told to do. And then obviously more patients came through and more people were being tested and finding that they were positive for COVID. So the infection was obviously spreading. And at work, things started to get, well, real. It was like the doctors, nurses started to get a bit sick, and you had to then isolate as well. And there was shortages in staffing. And then all of a sudden, we were being trained in tracheostomy care, in emergency ventilation, in CPR for someone that might have been infected. Protocols for hand hygiene were like upped. So we always have like audits on how to wash your hands. Like, it's the NHS, so we need to create good hygiene within our clinical areas. But it was like tenfold. It was like, okay, so, and then donning and doffing PPE, so that's putting on and taking off PPE and protective clothing. And we were just doing all of these things like in fast forward. So ward nurses who would never have to look after a patient with arterial lines and ventilators and tracheostomies, like, never, were being trained to read blood gases and look after what could potentially be critically ill patients. And then we were senior nurses such as myself were then asked how we could transfer our skills. So there was a call when we when things started to progress that, you know, the COVID patients are started to become critically ill, and there's a rise in intensive care patients, and that's where we needed to be. That ventilators were needed to basically save the lives of these patients, and when that failed, and when the proning procedures failed, which is turning the patient on their front to recruit the back of the lung to try and get more ventilation for that patient, when that sort of failed, then they would be referred for ECMO, which is extracorporeal membrane oxygenation. And I work at a hospital which is lead in ECMO, so we were then called upon to take patients all over the country from Devon and Cornwall right up to Scotland, Wales, everywhere. So we would go and pick up those patients and bring them to our hospital to then be put on to ECMO. And we needed more intensive care nurses because our intensive care nurses were absolutely flawed. Like, they were working incredibly long hours. And so I got transferred down to intensive care and then started my intensive care journey within COVID. So that was at March. So that was right at the start. And even then, it was just a total shock. Like, it was... we have an 18-bedded intensive care, and we turned our recovery into an intensive care as well. So that's an extra 10 to 12 spaces for level 3 patients. And then we turned our HDU, which is a high dependency area, into an intensive care as well. We kept all ECMOs from intensive care and recovery, and then sort of the patients who were just on ventilators would go to the HDU, which is still just a lot. We were having backup ventilators, old ventilators being used, our ECMO machines that we had to get from other hospitals because there weren't enough. And I just remember being so shocked at what I was walking into every day.
Did you feel supported by the NHS, by the government?
It was, even by my trust, the trust were great. They were really good at explaining the situation. You sort of just had to do it. You either had the skills that you could then use and help out with the pandemic, or you didn't, and you helped somewhere else. Luckily I did have the skills, and I did learn a lot of new things very quickly. Like, I'd never looked after an ECMO patient. It's a very like high skill, and it involves, you know, looking after a patient who's already got the ventilators, that they're being ventilated, and then we take their blood out of their body, and we basically do the job of the lungs outside their body. It goes through this machine that whirls around really quick, and then it puts it back in the other side. So, and just manning that, if there's a problem with that circuit alone, you've got seconds before that patient can die.
Out of air, I guess, running out of oxygen.
Yeah. Because it's perfusing, it's doing the job of your lungs. So learning new skills really quickly, and we called it, and now we look back and we laugh about it. Literally, I had a baptism of fire. That's basically what we call it. Like, here's a patient, here you go. Sort of put you through like 2 weeks of supernumerary training, which is ridiculous, and a normal intensive care nurse has 3 months supported. I had 2 weeks, I think it was like a week, really. And then going forward, you know, the government, I'm not gonna lie, I didn't feel supported by the government, unfortunately. I felt like we were gratified, sort of like, well done, we need you so much. We
pat on the back.
Yeah, we were given the hero complex, which I think is, at the time, it's like, oh yeah, I actually do a really good job, yeah. Like, oh, I actually feel really great that people know what we're doing.
Yeah.
But I've always done this. Like, and especially for the nurses who have always worked in intensive care, we always do this. You know, and so that's it's not we weren't supported by them. We were given it was actually the communities around hospitals and communities around.
Oh my god, there's a squirrel!
We're in the wild, people.
Oh, it's so cute.
It's the communities around the hospitals and the local businesses that supported the healthcare workers and everyone else, because they dropped us food, they dropped us everything, even because obviously the pandemic was over Easter. It was over Easter, so they dropped us like lint bunnies, all of these different things, and it was the local businesses that supported us. So more of less of the government, and then obviously after all of this is all finished, what's the NHS to them at the moment? You know, like, yeah. We haven't been given any rise. If anything, the fact that they've given out so many loans to different people, which was necessary, obviously, for those who have been furloughed and everything else. But they've done so much in the way of changing, how much loans they're giving, that the tax will definitely go up.
Yeah, undoubtedly.
And more of our pay will be bye. So what is already not enough is going to probably be a bit more of a struggle. So no, government, still, we don't like you. And as much as you think that a clap and a well done is enough, good, and a bit of media coverage is not. But we do the job. And there is this argument that nursing is a vocation. It is a vocation, but I also went to university for 3 years, and I paid to go to university, and I did a lot of studying, and I also want to get a mortgage and a car at some point, you know, that would be great.
And be able to live
off
my wage without paycheck to paycheck. Yeah.
So there is a lot of difficulties, but within COVID, definitely the communities, the local businesses have supported us a lot more than the government have. So, yeah.
One of the things that came across on your social media was like kind of how human you were within everything that was going on. And I remember seeing that you wrote stories for patients while they were asleep. I mean, was that something that came from you?
Yeah. So there was, in our intensive care, our matrons, obviously. And this is something that we would always do for a patient. So when a patient is in intensive care, it's a time that they might be in it for a week, or they might be in it for 1 month or longer. These patients, typically the COVID patients, were with us for more than 2 months,
which is actually really scary. So I don't think that was really translated
our longest COVID patient left our hospital literally 2 months ago. No, 1 month ago. Oh my gosh, I don't even know what month it is. Yeah, they left in August.
Yeah, so really recently.
Yeah, and they were there from April. So they are with us for a very long time. Within that time, we give them so many drugs that make them obviously not understand the environment that they're in. And even when we wake them up, and you know, take the tubes out and everything, there's a period which is been researched, obviously, that patients don't remember their ITU stays and what's happened to them. So it was really important, matrons sort of put across, that we make an effort to write in the patient diaries. So, and you know, it is difficult. It's a 12-hour shift, and people will think, you'll be able to write in a diary really quick. But we do everything every hour, and these patients, they're not well, so they're really unstable. So it's really difficult to sit down even for like 2 minutes to write in a diary. So it would be any chance that you sort of get, I would write in the patient diary, and it was just like an entry to say, and I'd always start with like, hey, the name of the person, my name's Olivia, I've been your nurse today. And I'd draw in the corner like a sun or a moon and say which sort of shift I was on, and just to say how they've been doing that day, like you're having a chat with that person. And I'm not gonna lie, I was sat doing one at like 3 a.m. 4 a.m. one morning, and it was it was like emotional. The patient wasn't very well, and you know, you don't know if they're ever going to read what you've written. And like, oh my god, I'm getting emotional now. Like, you don't know if they're going to read what you're writing to them. So yeah, like some of them will never. Some of their families will read it. I think, oh my gosh.
So you're going to me now?
Yeah. So there's been, oh my gosh. So, yeah, and that's just the reality that it is. I think those families, they never said goodbye. And that's the hardest thing.
Well, that's the most wonderful thing that you did, is even if they couldn't be there to say goodbye, you provided them with something that gave them an insight into the people they love's final days, and knew that someone was there caring about them.
Yeah.
Which I think is unbelievable. And it's such a human thing to do when you're under so much stress already.
Yeah. I think like that was one of the difficulties during COVID, that the families weren't allowed into the intensive care. They weren't allowed to say goodbye, and that was difficult, because as the nurse at the bedside, you're watching them and you're the one that are holding their hand, and you've only known this person maybe for like a month at the most, or a couple of weeks. It might be the first time you've ever looked after them, but their life is as important to you as your own. And that's basically what you've got to carry through. You've got to let that person and their family know that you've looked after them, like, right to the end. And those diaries are the most important thing, I think, to look back on for that patient's family, and also for hopefully that patient that probably have been through the worst and they've got through it. And that's incredible. So it was really important that I sort of relayed that, because I think people see you're a nurse and this awful pandemic is happening, but they don't see the other side, because it's not something that we talk about a lot, because it's so personal to those people.
Impacted, yeah.
Yeah. That I would never really go on to my Instagram and say, you don't talk about what you've done in a day.
No.
You know, there could have been a patient that's passed away and I've got another one and I've had a really bad day, but sometimes, you know, oh, I've had such a long day. It's easier to laugh about the days that, you know, things have been a bit rubbish, like
coping mechanism.
Yeah, but really the tough stuff, it's, you internalize and you can't even come home and talk about it to your loved ones, because it's very difficult, because you know it's not normal to do stuff like that, and then you just gotta go again and you just gotta keep going, and then you go back to work so those diaries were good for the patients, they were good for us, definitely, just to say what we were going through. So yeah, they were, and I think that was important to show that we were still creating those sort of communications between the patients and their families, because a lot of people obviously did know that you couldn't go and visit someone in hospital. So the fact that then we got like the iPhones, I remember putting one on about that we had family phones, so using FaceTime and sort of like showing the families their patient, their family member still in the hospital. And it was really strange because the family's just having a chat with you, which is normal obviously in intensive care when the families come in and see the patients, but at least they can like physically touch them and hold their hand. But it was a lot of me being on FaceTime with all my PPE on and being like, so we're doing great, or this has happened today, and showing them the area that they're in and the environment that they're in. And that was really nice. Like, it was really nice and it was really tough. And I think like the reason why I literally cried then is that you don't think about what you've done for the patients until you actually talk about it after.
Yeah.
And I've actually not talked about any of this, which is crazy.
No, it's just, I guess it was a difficult period for everyone. And when you're taking it in at the time, your release was coming home.
Yeah.
And being able to...
Oh, 100%.
Bash it out on get that assault bike. That took all of the stress. I don't know if it takes it away, does it?
Yeah, well, for me, I would be at work, be really, really exhausted by the end of that 12 hours. To say I wasn't is a lie, because I was. Or the end of that sort of night shift or whatever, I'd come home, and because at the time I didn't cycle then, I wasn't doing these crazy cycle hours that I'm now doing. At the time, Uber were giving us sort of discounted journeys, so that was lovely. Please, Uber, please bring that back. So they were basically letting us travel, and that really reduced the time getting from East London literally to West London. So I would then get an Uber home, sort of like have a little snooze in the back, and I'd look at my programming and I'd be like, right, as soon as I get in, just get my stuff on, get outside, get on that assault bike. And I'd be careful about how I would train. So I would always do my machine strength, which is programmed by Josh Alchama, and it was easy to sort of do that machine strength because it's there, it's gonna be brutal, it's gonna be on that assault bike, I can bash it out, let out anything that I feel during that day, which is, you know, it's just it's hard to give up when you're around people who are fighting for their lives, literally.
So is that your motivation? Because yeah, the workouts that you do after the days you have, like, not everyone has the motivation to do that.
Yeah, and that is 100% my motivation. If someone is laying there and I'm doing everything for them, to the extent of blinking for them, controlling how they breathe, then I can definitely for an hour and a half do the same and put in the work and do it myself. And I'm not going to give up, because, you know, it can be a lot worse. And one day, unfortunately, we will all come to like a place where we're either we can't do these things anymore, or we ourselves are fighting a bigger battle. And I think that while I'm able, there's nothing wrong with me, a bit tired, but I can definitely do it. So I think that's basically my biggest motivation when I get on that assault bike, that whatever is thrown at me, I can do it, I can get through it. Might be a bit of a struggle city. It might be like, you know, might be like not at my 100%, but definitely I give it all I got.
What was the worst workout you did over lockdown?
Oh my gosh, I will tell you, because I think I was literally, it was so sad. Like, luckily it wasn't after a shift. Definitely it was Josh's programming, and he partnered with... there was two. I'm going to say two because there was two. There was one which he partnered with Sam Briggs for. Like, it was ridiculous. It was, I can't remember exactly, but it was basically within a window of three minutes. So every 3 minutes on the minute, you do seven, it was 80, was it 80 double unders? Either 80 or 70, depending on male or female. And then go into a double, I think it was double devil press or double clean. And then it was 300 cows. So you couldn't get off. You couldn't stop until you'd reached 300 cows on the assault bike. So it took me 15 rounds. 15!
Oh. How many did it take Sam?
10. It took Sam 10, or I think it was 9 actually. Yeah, I think it was not, it was even 9 or 10 for Sam, and then Josh got one more or less. I can't remember if Josh did it quicker or Sam. I reckon Sam,
probably Sam,
sorry Josh. But literally I was just, it was I was winded. But it was one of those ones which you're like, just not gonna start. I just know that I'm the only person that can finish this workout, and I'm gonna keep going. And then there was another one that I did, which was when the heat wave hit.
Yeah, I remember that.
Oh my gosh. And it was, I got up to do it at like 10 a.m., which for me is early, by the way.
I was going to say, that's a really reasonable time to work out, because normally it's 10 p.m.
I'll tell you all about my workout times in a minute. So I got up early. So it was like 28 degrees already. And I got on the bike. It was basically 300 calories for time, but it was a short. It was like every 1 minute, every 2 minutes to get off and do 15 down ups, yeah, and then just until those 300 calories were up, which so it's a bit soul destroying. I'm not gonna lie,
it's a lot of down ups, actually.
It's a lot of down ups, yep. It's just one of those really sweaty, like, you just keep going, and because of the heat, it was just insane.
Yeah, absolutely. But what about the one where it was just peeing it down with rain, and you're still out here doing?
Literally, that was JST. So basically, like, the breakdown of my like training would be in the AM. I would do Josh's programming. Say if I didn't have work. In the AM, I'd do Josh's programming. And in the PM, I'd come out and do my JST programming. And that was more like the barbell, so the weightlifting and gymnastics, as much as I could have done.
Yeah,
because
lack of gymnastics equipment.
Yeah, I mean,
yard.
The rig is not here. Like, I really wanted to get a rig, a bar, and put it against this wall. But I do feel like the sort of stone that these houses are made of, I might have just broken off. That's probably what's gonna happen. So I did refrain from buying a bar, like a pull-up bar, and basically I would do that and then I'd do a WOD. So my normal breakdown of training, but in a very different environment. So yes, and that environment comes in wind, rain, scorching heat, darkness.
My favorite thing about it is, I'm not sure if any of the cameras can actually see the floor, but it's pebbled. So it's like, it's also like you're doing all these things in the crazy weather, but you also don't have an even surface to do anything
no
on.
So basically,
imagine if you need to do a push-up.
Yeah. there was a lot of compromise on where I did things, and I did create a bit of a lifting platform. So the floor, yeah, it is pebbles. It's stone. Still trying to get my landlord to put some AstroTurf down so I can actually work out properly. But it's stone, and I basically would push the stone apart, and I created a bit of a lifting platform. It's uneven. but it did the job.
Getting ready for anything, anywhere.
Literally.
Any workout, anytime.
I was lucky to borrow a squat rack. That's the only thing that I haven't replaced, actually, the squat rack from WIT. So I had a nice Alico assault squat rack, which I didn't have at the start because I was bare complexing like all of my weight onto my back, which was at times very risky on this floor, very risky. I created, I would drag the squat rack here, where I've created my little lifting platform, and I would do my front squats and my back squats here. And there was one very, very sad afternoon of, I put it on my story because people had to laugh at me. Like, I had to laugh at myself because I just put my hood up and it was absolutely tipping it down with rain. And I was just front squatting. And there were pause front squats as well. So it just looked really sad. I also did one of Josh's sprint workouts one afternoon in the storm that we had. So it was like thunder and lightning. And my housemate was like, Liv, you have to get off that assault bike because I reckon you could get hit by lightning.
Yeah,
like,
a conductor.
It was literally, literally. I was like, oh yeah, I've got one more to do. Like, one more.
You are actually a little bit mad.
Little bit, yeah. And I put all of these things on my Instagram because I just think you just got to laugh. Like, you know, it's a bit of rain. It's a bit of wind. Like, sometimes if my lifting was going bad, I would blame the weather. It's harder to lift outside, you know. Yeah. Like the wind, the wind, like that bar trajectory could go all amiss because that wind, you know.
You mentioned right at the beginning that you're aiming to turn the passion and the regular training into, you know, competition and competing.
Yeah.
100. So what's your vision?
So, I am one of these people that I don't like settling for she's good. Like I want to be someone. Like I want someone to be like
good.
Yeah. And that made me pursue the proper program. So if for people that don't know, I used to go to WIT and I used to do the classes and like a beginner CrossFit. I've only been CrossFitting for like 2 years now. So like anyone in the beginning CrossFit, you do every Metcon that you could possibly.
Oh my god, another squirrel!
The squirrel is back! Squirrel! you do every WOD possible.
Yeah.
Every class, every Metcon. Oh, I'm going to go to conditioning as well. Like, because it's great.
Yeah, it's
and
great
you want to do it.
Yeah.
So I got all
Lots of
that.
Classes.
Got all that on my system.
It's really funny, I'm resonating because that's me at the moment.
Yeah, literally.
Like, I'm like, oh, I'll go at lunchtime, do my own thing, then I'll go in the evening, I'll do that class, and there's competition class, I'll do that, but I'm going to do the one before it because I kind of fancy it, then weightlifting.
Yeah. I'm just going to go.
And I'm not going to eat, but I will have a protein shake. Now I'll eat, but it'll probably be the pizza from the night before. Like, that's my life.
Literally. So I was basically WIT's, like, number one class girl, I swear. Probably. Oh, yeah. So I did that for a long time, and then I realized, oh my gosh, I am a nurse, so I do get the, it is a perk that I do get to train during the day because we don't work every day. We work 3 or 4 shifts a week, and then the other days we have off, and those shifts can be nights as well, so then I'm free during the day depending on timing. So I used to take the most of open gym. And then during open gym, I was like, well, this is foreign. Everyone looks like they know what they're doing, but there's no programming on the wall. And then I basically would just jump in with Gus, who's the head coach at WIT, and he does his own programming. So he does program some athletes abroad and here. And so he would just share his programming with me. And I did that for a good 6 to 7 months, and that sort of built my confidence to be able to be like, yeah, I can train in open gym alone or with people who are doing the same
thing.
Yeah, yeah. And can commit to it and, you know, progress on it. And then I wanted to get more serious, so then I was like, okay, so I can do all of this. Like, I'm good at lifting, I'm good at like endurance, but my gymnastics, like, as much as Gus tried to help, like, he wasn't always in the gym all the time, and, you know, and it wasn't a proper gymnastics program, sort of, like, so I was like, okay, I need to sort of up my game here. So then I started looking around at gymnastics programming, as well as being able to still have the rest of the programming. So then I looked at lots of different programmers, and then I saw JST. And JST obviously have their gymnastics bias.
Yep.
And I was like, well, this is for me. Like, I'm gonna have to get involved. So I then have been doing JST's gymnastics bias for, I would say, 7 to 8 months now. So it's been 7 months. Yeah, 7 months, because it was just before lockdown that I sort of started. I had 2 months of it in the gym, which was a bit annoying because gymnastics bias is obviously very heavy on the rig, creating good shapes and stuff. But lockdown actually did help me to focus on, like, you know, your hollow holds and all the stuff that you don't really like rolling around on the gym floor, because the rig's there. So you want to go and swing off the rig and try and attempt to do bar muscle ups. So then I decided to do JST, and that's basically where I'm at now. So I'm programmed by JST in their gymnastics bias. So as soon as I sort of feel very comfortable with my gymnastics movements, which I'm getting there, I will then move to compete, which is more of a one-to-one programming. So then I'll have an actual coach which is one-to-one based. And then I obviously get programmed by Josh for everything cardiovascular endurance, which is great for my ward endurance, yeah, and everything else. So the plan is, as soon as I've got my gymnastics nailed, because, you know, it's difficult to go into an RX competition when your gymnastics are not RX. You can't really, you know. So as soon as I got that down, my aim is like 2021 to 2022 to then compete individually at RX. Awesome. In as many competitions, well, given that within I reason. Discuss yeah. with coach what I can do. So I'm really commit to that, and I feel like that's a good goal for me, because I feel like I'm definitely motivated and committed enough to do it. I've changed a lot of my ways and realized that I need to focus on things more instead of trying to do it all. I need to obviously sleep and eat a lot better than what I was doing, which lockdown has actually really helped me to do, which has been great. And obviously I'm always inspired. And I think one of the things that I thought was that I needed to be a coach to be able to compete, that because I needed to have that, like,
the time and access to the gym. And
yeah. And it was to the extent that I was going to give up nursing last year. Glad it didn't. So I was gonna give up being a nurse because I was so engulfed by CrossFit. And I do think genuinely, and a lot of people do message me on Instagram being like, oh my gosh, I really want to be a CrossFit coach, like I really just want to do CrossFit, I want to teach it, I want to do it. And I'm like, just think about what you're gonna give up, like, and what your actual goals are. So it was to the extent that I even enrolled on the level one yeah. CrossFit course. I wasn't really enjoying work at the time because I was in a different area and things like that. So there was a lot of different things going on, and I found that I really enjoyed CrossFit a lot more. I was new to it, so I was obsessed with it. And then
also, it's your hobby. So naturally, yeah. if your job's not going great, then you're going to really love your hobby a lot yeah. more.
So I was like, I was just so close to giving up nursing and just becoming a coach and feeling like I'm going to have so much time to train myself, and I'm going to go to the games.
There's still time.
Oh my gosh, I'm actually really time. Young, everyone. I just had to think a bit more like focused. So I was like, I can do it as well as being a nurse. And obviously things picked up with work, and I'm really starting to enjoy it. I got a promotion and things like that. So things started going in a positive direction. And I also spoke to people and who were coaches, who were like, you do know being a CrossFit coach means that you probably do less CrossFit because you're teaching it. Yes, I get to train, but then there's a lot that go on behind the scenes, yeah. which we all don't know about. So, yeah. So I sort of put the coaching to one side, save that for maybe like a couple of 10 more years or something. Yeah, yeah. And I do want to focus on myself as an athlete, not as someone that
coaching
teaches. Yeah. So I want to be the athlete and I want to be the focus. So that's definitely sort of where I'm heading towards. So exciting. And hopefully, you know, that's something that's going to resonate, and people who are around me at the moment really do inspire me. Like I get very lucky, I get to train with Karis Webster. She's obviously a doctor and has been, and did take some time off to focus on going to strength and depth and sanctionals and stuff, and is working
and
towards
one event
that
one.
Literally,
so
she's
big time.
Oh,
so
gosh,
good.
She's a wonder to watch in the gym, but she does and she doesn't just watch. We like have good chats, and she'll like help me with my technique, and she'll give me like pointers and stuff. And it's really good being able to actually work out with her day to day, and in an open gym. So that's a really good insight. And also, obviously, one of my friends and one of my absolute heroes, Meg Lovegrove, she's obviously a female boss of of the UK in CrossFit, but she was a physiotherapist. And so we spent a lot of time chatting, and she actually started at the same age that I am to take it more seriously. So yeah, yeah, it is really exciting to
I'm very excited for you.
Yeah, to think that maybe I'll be, you know, competing and rubbing my massive shoulders, yet to grow more, against like the likes of those sorts of females, which is great and insane. So
Livy told, I'm coming to a competition floor near you.
Near
soon.
You. But any running event, just avert your eyes because that's still a work in progress.
Thank you so much for taking the time to sit down in your garden and chat with us.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's been really great. I just really enjoy. I just love chatting.
It's very easy, isn't it? I think we're probably on like for an hour and at least an hour. I don't
Sorry, guys.
Okay, we like to talk. But yeah, so if people want to find you, YouTube and Instagram, where
yes,
can find you?
Is my main two. Yeah, I'm definitely not like one of these tweeters. I'm so bad. Like I probably should start tweeting just
random. It's not a thing in CrossFit though. No,
no.
One tweets in CrossFit.
Yeah,
it's much more visual medium, whereas Twitter is when it's on telly you can complain about the team you're watching.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so yeah, my Instagram is at Livy Tom CrossFit Nurse.
Yeah.
And my YouTube as well is The CrossFit Nurse, or if you type in Livy Tom, because that's my username, you'll be able to find me very easily.
So guys, make sure you find her, check out her YouTube and follow her on Instagram, because her stories are brilliant when she's working out in the rain doing four squats. But yeah, outside of that, we're podcast of the day, podcast _O_D. And yeah, we've got loads coming for you this year. Lots to talk about later on as things develop. We'll keep you informed, but hopefully a lot more content coming your way.
Hey, thank you for having me.
Thank you for coming on.
Thanks so much, guys, for listening to Podcast of the Day. And we're not ready to let you go just yet. We have Justin Romare with us. And for the next couple of minutes, we're going to talk about a really exciting charity venture that is happening over in the USA. But I'm not going to bore you with the details because Justin is very, very passionate and he is here to tell you a little bit more. So, Justin, can you tell us all the incredible things you're doing over in the US with FosterFit?
Hey, Lauren, how's it going?
Yeah, good.
You know, we're not doing a lot of great things in the U.S. right now with this COVID-19, but there are some other things we're doing, hopefully, that excite people. And one of those things that we've come up with and what we've been wanting to do for a long time is FosterFit. So FosterFit is a 3-event online competition. So anybody can participate, even you guys in the UK. So we're looking into outreach to everybody who might be interested in participating in some way. And we're essentially a fundraiser, and we're raising money for kids in foster care, foster youth and teens that, you know, want to participate in CrossFit. So the money raised during this fundraiser, either from you participating in the competition or from you just donating, will go towards a 1-year membership to foster youth. It'll be a scholarship for them to attend CrossFit for the year.
I absolutely love the idea. But where did it come from your end? Why this particular venture?
Yeah, so my background is in CrossFit and I've loved CrossFit for the past 5 or 6 years. It's something that I've been, you know, extremely passionate about, my background. So I was adopted very early, at a very early age. So I was fortunate enough not to have to go through the rigors of the foster care system. But, you know, there's 500,000 kids in foster care in the US, and they experience a lot of mental health, developmental, psychosocial, and, you know, based traumas rooted in, you know, adversity and throughout their childhood. And just like one statistic that sticks out is only 50% of kids in foster care actually graduate from high school, you know? And, you know, it's things like this that a lot of people don't have the awareness around. So we're looking to bring that awareness. And then also, you know, a lot of scientific studies are saying, especially psychologist-based studies are saying that these kids in foster care and foster youth in general have benefit greatly from normalcy and consistency. And if we can keep them in the same CrossFit gym over several years, then that provides that, you know, loving and nurturing community that we all know at a CrossFit gym.
I was going to say that something about the community of CrossFit must just fit perfectly into perhaps what these kids are lacking.
Yes, absolutely. And just to talk a little bit more about the normalcy and consistency, there are, you know, a lot of foster kids, the average is that they change homes 6 to 7 times.
Oh my God.
Right. So yeah, all this trauma that they're experiencing is extremely detrimental to their livelihood. And so if we can continue to, you know, give the year membership to these kids over time, if they hit the scholarship requirements, then that does provide that consistent love that we're striving for.
It's amazing. How much does it cost for a scholarship for one person? And how much are you hoping to raise?
Yeah, we're hoping to raise around $10,000. We think that this will provide about 15 to 20 kids with a pair of CrossFit shoes if they don't have workout shoes, and in a CrossFit gym membership for a year. There will be different prices between different gyms and things like that. And other gyms are willing to give a discount for some of these, foster youth. And I think everybody has sort of their own special story when it comes to adoption, foster care, and people really are genuinely wanting to help out. So we're extremely excited about it.
It's come at a really good time as well, isn't it, with CrossFit as a company kind of pledging to support diversity and inclusion. Have you reached out to them at all? Are they interested in helping?
Yeah, so we actually just got this rolling a couple of weeks ago. We've been working on it throughout the year and getting everything sort of ready. And we've reached out to a number of people, including yourself, to put us on a podcast to bring more awareness, which is great. Thank you so much. But yeah, we're going to start reaching out to, some other, high platform based companies. And yeah, if we can get involved directly with CrossFit, that would be the ultimate goal at the end of the day.
Well, we've got to get it to them, haven't we? Let's do some more podcasting. So how can people get involved? Because I'm sure, like, given this is obviously based in the US, but anyone around the world can take part or donate. How can people do that?
Yeah, so we have a GoFundMe link that I could provide you. If you type in GoFundMe Foster Fit, you could probably find it as well. And then also, if you want to sign up directly for the competition, you can do so through Wattify Arena. So you can go to fosterfit.wattifyarena.com and you can directly sign up for the competition. Our events will be coming out the week of November 9th. And from there, you can do all three events whenever you'd like and submit your scores between the 16th and 21st. So you're able to do these events really wherever you want, in your gym, in your home, wherever is most convenient for you. And yeah, you can also find us on Instagram at fosterfit double underscore. So foster underscore underscore fit. So you can find us there as well.
And guys, we'll put up a link on the podcast of the day Instagram page, so there's an easy route through. Appreciate this is short and sweet, Justin, but it was so good to talk to you. And I'm honestly, I think what you're doing is amazing. I wish we had more something like this over in the UK as well. Like, it seems like such a simple and easy thing to do, to give some real kind of structure to these kids' lives and just make them better.
I agree completely. Maybe we can branch out to the UK after we've proven we can do it here in the US.
So guys, make sure you go and check it out. And you sign up for their online competition. And if you don't fancy competing, because I know some of us are still getting used to the post-lockdown kind of fitness life, Then make sure you just donate a little bit of money. It doesn't need to be much, but it's going to an incredible cause. So thank you very much, Justin.
Thanks, Laura. Appreciate it.